You're listening to Red Nation Online.
Welcome to From the Black Hole, episode 97. Joining me on today's podcast is Technical Director of Calgary Foothills Soccer Club, Tommy Wheeldon Jr. Sitting here with Tommy Wheeldon, TD of Foothills in Calgary. He's been on the podcast several times before, and it's always great to touch base. Thanks for joining me.
Well, I couldn't keep ignoring you, Rob.
You tried, right? You tried, but I was too persistent.
Yeah. Well, listen, when you show up at my house, I think I have to accept you and warm you, bring you in.
Well, yeah, I didn't think that's what you were going to say. You're saying, when you show up at my house, that's when I phone the police and get a restraining order. So, no, thanks for coming back on. And it was kind of short notice, but the timing worked out brilliantly because I was close to Calgary and I could get in here. Calgary. I got to say it right.
Okay.
Otherwise, isn't that how it's supposed to be said?
I guess. Do you know what? People have been correcting the way I say things for so many years. Just because of the accent,
yeah,
I think I just roll with it. So
yeah.
I'm probably the worst person to tell about pronunciation.
So now, can we go... I think the last time you were on, you might have been in the middle of your second PDL season.
Okay.
And you guys made quite a run, and you got back to the championship game, or you got to the championship game, and lost in a bit of a difficult set of circumstances.
That we did.
But, I mean, coming out of that, though, I mean, I don't want to necessarily rehash that game in particular or whatnot, but you guys must have had a massive amount of momentum as a club, within the city, with that group of players and maybe other players. Can you talk about what that playoff run and the trip to the game did for Foothills just in general and the people within it?
Do you know what? It's going to be one of those that we'll look back on and say that was probably the season that had everyone think, okay, they're legitimate. Because we had several of our academy products in there, we built it up with, you know, great local players from other clubs and other universities. I always laugh, you know, Nico Pasquotti was a lad from, at the time, Lethbridge College, and he was walking around his Birkenstocks, and we were playing guys that were US under 20 internationals, and he would just play them like there was no care in the world, and that was a lot of our players. You know, you look at the playoff run that Dominic Russo had, that Dylan Powley had, that Elijah Adekubi. These lads had great seasons. Dominic Zator and Tyron Hutchins went on to have good careers, you know, now in the professional world. It was a breakout moment for the club because we've won national youth championships. We've always produced players before my time. Kevin McKenna, you know, Canadian international captain. Owen Hargreaves, another big one. Sam Adekubi. Charlie Trafford, players like that that have gone on. But as a team in the PDL, where there's 74 other teams across North America as the best under 23 league, we just, no matter who we played against, we performed. And I think that playoff run was spectacular because it took us from, you know, we won the league down in Seattle when we were 2-0 down to Seattle.
Right.
And won 3-2 in spectacular fashion, then brought them up to here for the playoff game. And we went 1-0 up, it went to 1-1, then they get a penalty late in the game, and we're like, oh no, Powley saves it, and we're like, hang on a minute, and you need that little bit of luck on the run. We go on to score, Jeej Sakiria, and then Topher Fakunli scores, probably, I've been at the club 10 years, he scored a goal that just, it gives me goosebumps this day, that it was right in front of our kids, our fans, he was in, you know, a former Foothills product, that when he scored, the kids run to him, and there's some great pitches that we've used ever since.
Right.
And it will stick with me that that was just almost like our coming of age moment.
Right, right.
And then you go from there, Rob, and we just add momentum, and we go down to Tucson, and everything becomes new. The wonderful facility in Tucson where they host the MLS preseason. FC Tucson had this wonderful, you know, run in their conference, and Rick Shantz, who's now the number two at Phoenix Rising, mm-hmm. you know, where Drogba is, he was their head coach. And Golden State, who won the Western Conference this year, we played them, beat them 1-0, beat, you know, Tucson 2-1 late, Dominic Zator chest volley in the dying moments.
Right.
And then suddenly we're now on the road again, going to New Jersey, playing Ocean City Nor'easters, who were, you know, the highest scoring team in the league, and we just went there, knew how to stop them, and ended up winning 3-0 at their patch, fly home, and then fly out to Michigan. And by this time, we're clocking up more air miles than Richard Branson.
Yeah.
So I think we just got used to living out of a suitcase for a month. And I think really we played a good game against Michigan Bucks. I think we probably seemed a little tired near that last 15 minutes where they scored a couple. But I mean, the lads were heroic. And I think I'll always concentrate on the positives, and you know, the fact that we lost it to a dubious penalty, that's football. It's dramatic.
Yeah, sure.
I think it keeps us coming back for more. The fact that it was a decision, not a moment of brilliance, that cost us the trophy, but brought us back hungrier, stronger, gave some of the lads some professional environments. And as I said, it put us on the map. And I think people probably were more drawn to us, the fact in the nature that we lost it, than actually gone on and won it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's almost like you're martyrs to a certain extent.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, we did.
In a way.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, you mentioned something while you're talking there about, sorry, what was the kid's name from Lethbridge?
Nico Pasquotti.
Okay, so, I mean, that seems indicative of an idea that I hear a lot, but then, you know, it's hard to suss out whether it's mm-hmm. true. And the idea is, there's talent there, mm-hmm. but not necessarily opportunity. So you give chunks of these kids opportunity, and then maybe they can get to a point where they can compete at least regionally, if mm-hmm. not around the world. Do you think that that experience going through to that final game maybe underlined that a little bit?
Yeah, it did. And what it showed me was we have great talent here, and it's, you know, even before us, KW United won it mm-hmm. the year before,
right?
And Thunder Bay Chill went to the final this year, and they lost out, you know, yeah. to a one goal game, 2-1. So it just shows you that there is talent in Canada, and what we've got to do is create the opportunity. What we're very habitual on is we develop players up to 17, 18, but there's a plateau effect, I feel, and this is my personal opinion, around 16, 17, when kids realise that they're not
right.
going to Whitecaps,
right.
Montreal, or
right, right.
Toronto. They're miles off from going to FC Edmonton or Ottawa, so now they're starting to look at university. And once they're at university and they've been offered, they're focusing on their business degree or kinesiology, and their mind frame changes to that profession. Mm-hmm. They want to become pros in that profession, and soccer becomes a vehicle to pay for their education, which is great.
Right.
And that's it. They want to tap out. So we, as a club, decided that how can we really continue to push boundaries and help change the landscape of Canadian soccer. So we put our money where our mouth was and bought the PDL franchise, because recognised that age group between 17 to 23 was still a wonderful age of development. And the Americans have been doing it for years through the NBA drafts, the mm-hmm. NHL drafts, the NFL, where they're actually recruiting young men mm-hmm. who have degrees that if their careers don't pan out, they go back to their, you know, their degrees. And I think it's admirable. So we followed that suit.
Right. Now, since then,
mm-hmm.
There have been a lot of changes around here. In fact, around here wasn't even around here
yeah.
not that long ago. Can you kind of take me through the trajectory of this amazing facility that we're sitting in, and where the idea came from, and then the challenges that you had to kind of overcome to get this
yeah.
thing built? Because, man, what a focus for a club.
Yeah, this is great. And I believe it's the largest club-owned field house. And we did it through raising money privately. It's not city land, not city government bought the land, paid for things, and we're the biggest tenants here. So I'm going to, he hates it when I say his name, but Danny Hay is a genius behind the scenes, and he's our, you know, executive director now, CFO in his daily work, but found a way in a downturn economy to put together a financial package to go with the vision of what we're trying to achieve here. And he was the one that hired me 10 years ago with a club, and he literally, the most attractive thing we had was he gave me a blank canvas and said, look,
right,
I want to help make a difference in this country. How can I help? I'm business. I know a bit about soccer. I played in Red Deer College. He said, you're soccer. So I learned business off him, and in turn I give him the soccer and vice versa. And this is wonderful. This is what, 84,000 square feet of turf. So it's four sizes, 125 by 75, the field size. So we can play a full massive 11v11, or we can have four 7v7 fields or three 8v8 fields. We've got different compositions for whatever format of a game we want. Mm-hmm. And we might break it into eighths when we're training the little tackers that want to work on technique.
Right.
Inside it, we've got our own, you know, 2,500-3,000 square foot sports science department that I walked you through.
Yeah.
Locker rooms, a 5,000 square foot mezzanine up top, like viewing area. At time of talking, we're actually going to be fitting in some cameras, just so we can have some video review, some eyes in the sky that can give, you know, young kids, coaches, feedback that they want. We live in that era. And outside, you can see now we've just put the turf down, and we want to make a feature field outside where we can host our own featured game. So.
Right.
It's ours. We don't have to worry about, you know, having to deal with the bookings of the city and cross-pollinate with other sports. This is our home, and it's I'd say it's the best drive coming in the morning knowing that this is your office.
Right. And you've got, you know, all of your staff here.
Mm.
And I imagine once the programs get going and or more,
mm-hmm.
like every day this place is going to be lit up with players and mm-hmm. coaches and parents and all your staff.
Yeah, I mean,
it's such
great.
A focus. It's such a focus for everybody, right?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's what we found even 5 years ago when we moved into our old facility. We found it increased our club camaraderie. And by that, I mean that, you know, we live in a country where 6 months a year we're in snow.
Right.
So clubs that don't have access to their own facility are training school gyms. So I found when I first came over and started coaching youth soccer, through the winter I'd be having fuzzy balls and school gyms. And
right.
at Christmas you had 2/3 of this gym and because the school band was there and you couldn't move the equipment. So yeah, I'm thinking, oh, what am I doing? But it taught you to be creative and embrace right. that. And now we've got people crossing over with each other in the hallways. You know, you're seeing coaches. So during these 6 months, we do our best form of education with our coaches, with our players, with our parents, because we're all together.
Mm-hmm.
Outdoors is a different model because everyone's at different fields, different schedules. But here is an incubator for... For creating players. Like our ethos is, you know, developing excellent players and outstanding people. And that's our incubator.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just... It's a pretty sexy building.
Mm. Yeah, no, it is. It is.
It's yeah. almost jaw-dropping, right? Yeah. You go in and I can just imagine the mezzanine mm-hmm. isn't just a mezzanine. It's like the soccer culture,
mm-hmm.
you know, little warehouse out there where, I mean, people, when you talk about all the barriers mm-hmm. to developing good players, parents are cited mm-hmm. pretty regularly
mm-hmm.
because... Often they don't understand what it means to develop players. Mm-hmm. What they react more is my kid getting the playing time, or are we winning, or are we winning mm-hmm. trophies and those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like that mezzanine could be a re-education center.
Yeah.
And the conversations that you would have up there, they pick mm-hmm. away at those ideas, those hard and fast mm-hmm. ideas about what it means to be good. It could change the mm-hmm. idea of what a parent would think of what it means to be good in that mezzanine that's the re-education center.
Well, do you know what? We have a saying, the car ride home could probably undo your practice. So if you had a 90-minute practice, 3-minute conversation, the car ride home could really undo everything you just worked on. And the way we verbalize it is they don't know what they don't know. So if we don't help educate and tell them why we're doing what we're doing, then we're at blame too. So we have to take the accountability to share with them why we're doing things and where we're trying to go. And that's going to be a big focal point of our development plan moving forward, or continue to be moving forward. We just have a better vehicle now when we put projectors up there and talk to them and have a cup of teas with them. We just need to keep spreading the word about what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah. I mean, it's flabbergasting to walk around in here. It's quite a facility.
Mm.
It's a really class facility. So you must, you must feel pretty proud of it. And
very much so. Yeah. And as you can see behind, you know, we've got the smart boards, which we had kindly donated. We feel that, you know, the world is becoming more interactive. So we have to click the upgrade button too. So
right,
not only
right.
on what we deliver on the pitch, it's what we interact off the pitch. Kids are different learners now, you know, they're, you know, got a shorter memory span, as you know, being a former teacher. Is we've got to get our message across to the kids, and we've got to use different platforms to do it, from iPads to smart boards to X's and O's to verbal to showing them. And we've got to stretch the boundaries of communication, because the more we can get to them, the more they're going to be encouraged to play on their own, because we all know that's going to be the difference maker, is what they do when they're away from this building.
Yeah. And you guys have made some investments and strides on the women's side.
We do, yeah.
As well, which, I mean, like, I don't think in this day and age that a club should probably make investments as equally as they possibly can. Can you talk about the women's team and what they accomplished this year? This is the first year.
Yeah, yeah, inaugural year. I mean, they've had a smashing year. And to be honest, and this is a large credit to Troy Flannery, because I think we went down to the first USL AGM, and our plan was to launch the PDL in year 2015 and the W League in 2016. And then, right, as we'd been accepted and given all our approvals for the W League, it folded.
Right.
And we're like, oh, crap. So we literally went on the pause button for a while, and then it was literally the start of the year. You know, Troy gets a call and says, look, you're still interested in looking for a solution. You know, this is Joe Ferreira, UWS. Here's where we're trying to fill the gap. We're trying to be that next layer, Div 2, underneath the NWSL. We'd love to add you to the system. He's like, I've got to get my team together, bring players out of, you know, the college system and alumni, and I've got to raise a business plan all of this time. So he put his pedal to the metal and produced a really exciting team to watch. And he blooded some of our youngsters, like Maya Jones, who's just been called into our under-17 camp, Sarah Kinsner, who's in the under-20s, some promising players. And then he, you know, brought some outside players, like Miss Melissa Roy came in, and, you know, Emily Burns up in Grant McEwen. Had a couple of players like that, which really bolstered the environment. And finished second in the conference at Santa Clarita, where you know, they won it last year, and Lauren Sesselman is still playing, and they had one of the FIFA World Players of the Year playing for them, and he was named Western Conference Coach of the Year. And credit to him and the girls, they were great. And I remember, actually, it was nice for me, because I'd been coaching the PDL and the teams, it was nice for me to go as a fan, and I found myself sat with, you know, the our fans, and just engaging in it and supporting it. And it was it was great to see, and we're going to continue going that way. We have our vision, our 10-year vision from here on out. We'd like to bring an NWSL franchise to Canada,
right?
And as you know, Rob, anything we say, that we end up doing,
for the most part, that's been true.
So
far,
yeah.
I mean, people can't you know, we'll have to at least think about taking you at your word when you say those things, because so far right, you guys are you know, you've made a list and you're checking things off those lists. It seems like there's a new one every year. You kind of referenced a little bit about him coming up with a business plan. I mean, none of this stuff is free.
Nope.
And in this day and age, it's not easy. You know, you referenced the economic downturn when we were talking before and whatnot. Can you talk a little bit about the difficulties of getting past all the financial hurdles? I just want to mention something. I remember I think it was maybe a Twitter. There were a bunch of tweets that you posted about, you had a breakdown? Did you guys, or a flight mishap?
A mental breakdown.
A mental breakdown.
Yeah. There's been a few of them in the season. No, it was, we had to go to Portland, so our schedule was off balanced, and it was us and the Timbers, their under 23 team, were fighting for first spot.
Right.
So they beat us on the Saturday, and it was a 3-game road trip, so we had to play 3 games in 4 days, which is tough at any level, yeah. Let alone at the PDL where they're fit, fast, and able. So we played Lane United, we tied them, had to drive from Oregon to Portland. Played Portland, they wiped the floor with us and scored. Everything they hit went in. They beat us 4-0. Right. Now, suddenly, they were in first spot, a point above us. So, Leon and myself, we rallied the boys, and we beat them 2-1. Dying moments, Ali Moussi scored a penalty and clutch. And it was great, because it was a great atmosphere. The Timbers Army, even at that stage, they were getting 1,500, and they were giving us crap. And
right.
Putting, you know, hockey players behind bars as their TIFOs, and it was great, Rob, because our players hadn't experienced the negativity and the heckling.
Yeah, sure.
So for us to score in the last couple of minutes, you can be sure a couple of our players give it back to them. But afterwards,
it's a character builder.
Yeah, in the parking lot they were smashing. So we end up getting to the airport, but we're stuck on I-5. So we're calling Air Canada, just saying, "Hey, listen, we're on our way," and we get there an hour and 15 before, but we hadn't. Hour and 15 before the flight had left.
Well, that's a reasonable amount of time.
Correct.
Is it not?
Correct.
Okay. I'm
so Air Canada, if you're listening.
This is another United Breaks Guitars moment.
So we get there and we drop the boys off and we're dropping the vans off and they're running there and they get there and it's hour and 15 and the guy said, "Oh no, it's too late to get you guys all in." And we're like, "We've got 15 minutes to spare. You got to let us in." And at the same stage, this woman and husband and daughter is in tears because they won't let them on. I'm like, "Well, hang on, surely you've got to give us another option here. We've got 15 minutes, but I can't get you on. This is all carry-ons. If you have to send our travel bag the next day, then do it." He said, "Nope, sorry." And what we'd later heard, and we could have sure, of course, press charges if we wanted to. A flight had been cancelled. People had been moved onto this flight because we were late to check in.
Oh, and it was full anyway.
So then, we're then looking to say, "Well, how do we get back?" And then we had to buy new flight tickets because we hadn't checked in. So we looked around. To get us home cost 14 grand. And on a budget that we've got, we haven't. So I said to the boys, "Listen, we can't." So myself, the physio, Lloyd Webber, Panther Sports and Medicine, Leon, we said, "We're going to have to drive." So we found a company, Alamo, which were great. And they said, "Look, we can do a one-way drop-off. It cost us about 2 grand to get across the border, but we drove 14 hours.
Yeah, I know. I saw some of the pictures, and I mean, prairie people drive, so that's sometimes part of the for the course. But that's a long
But it gets worse. Okay. So at least we've won, and we're like, okay, now we're in our hands. We're 2 points up. We've got Victoria Hindlers, who will be another Canadian derby on our last game of the season. So whoever won got to host the playoff game. So we have a lighter week because the boys are still tired after three games in 4 days.
And a 14-hour drive.
14-hour drive. They're grumpy uni students at the best of times. And we get back, we have a light week, play Victoria, and you can tell there's a bit of flatness. We take a lead. Bruno Zebi, who's had a smashing season. And then we have other chances. We have other chances to score, to win, put the game amongst them, because you can tell that Victoria are just playing for fun. They're expressing themselves and they're battling. But a second goal would have just killed it off, guaranteed, because they'd have. And we had a breakaway right in the 89th minute, 90th minute. Keeper saved it, gone up the other end, big kick, boom, bounced out for a throw in, boom, goal, 92nd minute. And the place went deadly silent. But prior to that, we had to secure, because part of our agreement to be in the PDL to start with was we had to subsidise travel.
Yeah, I understand that.
So we've done that agreement, and that's no longer part, but that was our commitment to being in better leagues for our players to play in. So part of this agreement...
Sorry, can I just back you up there for a second? So that was 3 years of doing that?
3 years.
And now, going into next year, you don't have to do that?
No longer.
That's going to be a load off, isn't
it? Yeah. That was huge. So,
wow.
But that was our commitment. We knew that that was part of the caveat to get in. We accepted it, and we knew if we... Because our goal has always been to bring a professional franchise here. So if we couldn't afford, 150, 200 grand of operating, we had no business talking about the $1.5 million to $2 million to $3 million budgets to get going. So
okay. Yeah, okay, but doing that for a PDL team where it's mm-hmm. much more difficult to draw fans mm-hmm. in and raise revenue is mm-hmm. different than doing it for a pro team where, mm-hmm. you know, you snap your fingers and you're going to get more
but you know
fans and sell more merchandise and sell more, you know,
absolutely. Beer, but there was case studies with, you know, like Fresno Fuego are getting 2,500 fans. Portland Timbers under 23s are getting 1,500.
Right.
So we just felt that, you know, Highlanders were, you know, before they folded and then reemerged, they were getting 1,200 on good days. So
okay.
we realized that there was definitely a market to get there. And Calgary's been without a professional or pro-am team for that long that we knew that we're ambitious enough to think that we could make
right,
it,
right.
and we have.
Right.
So we had to make a decision on the playoff game. Portland wanted to run the... They wanted to say, let's see out to the last game. We said, well, if we pay for the flights 48 hours, they're going to be like 15 to 20 grand
right,
to get
right.
you up. So we tried to come up with an agreement. We couldn't settle upon it. So we had to book a set of flights. So we booked them coming to us. And we said, right, if we're going to gamble on anything, we gamble on ourselves. And as it stood, that 92nd minute equalizer cost us more than just the league. Because we end up, they won their game, we finished level on points.
Right.
They had a better goal difference, they scored more goals than us. So the league rules, we had to go. So I just said to the boys, listen, we have no money. Our budget's maxed. We can't raise additional money in 24, 48 hours. We have to be there on Tuesday.
Right.
So we met Monday morning, and the boys said, look, we've done it once. Let's drive again. And they all had a whip round and talked to friends, family members, come up with the money to rent the cars. We drove down there. We got in there 2-3 o'clock at night. Early hours of the morning.
Right, right.
Of the day of the game. After 14 hours on the road again. And, you know, unfortunately, we didn't have a great performance. We battled second half, but everything we hit, they saved. And
with all of that, it's not a terribly huge shock.
No. So then on the way back, this is the whole breakdown moment, was Leon was driving and I was in. So to kill the time, we're just like, season's over, right? So we're listening to podcasts.
Right.
So we haven't got the GPS on. And he's like, I think we've gone past. This doesn't look familiar.
Oh,
so I get the GPS back on. I'm like, oh, yeah, we're 30K beyond. So we had to turn back around, add another 30K to it. And we're gas is running out. It's like literally 12K to get there, 8K of gas left, and we're like that, and then suddenly it just started slowing down. Fortunately, we had a car ahead of us. We told them to turn around and bring the gas.
Where was this?
This was, I can't even remember.
Is this in Washington?
This is in the US, yeah.
See, it'd be more comfortable if you were in BC or southern Alberta somewhere, but
so it was literally, it was just, it wrapped it up, and we had to laugh, and these are stories now that the boys will appreciate when they're off on their other professions.
Right. Right.
In the professional world, that is, you know, being part of the development pyramid.
You know, I mean, as much as there are all those headaches, being part of an epic like that almost becomes a badge of honor later.
Yeah.
While it's happening, it's not so good. Mm. After it's happening, you know, like everybody says, I'll be able to look back and laugh, right?
Well, and do you know what? Because we were the league leaders last year, we suddenly become the pantomime villains because we were now the ones that we were to beat. So everybody brought their best game, and that's great because it's great for our local players. But
right.
the Timbers, their Timbers army and all them had really started to goad our players. But you could tell they knew our story of the driving out and then driving back, that they almost warmed to us. And even after the game, they're
right,
just giving
right.
us stand ovations for just the guts that we had to,
right.
to do it, because not many other teams would have. And I think we won a lot of respect in that way, that we're not going to complain about things. We'll deal with what is laid in front of us. And I think that's a great culture that we have as a club, and we as a Canadian culture have, that we'll roll up our sleeves and do what it takes.
Yeah. Some people think that that's waning a little bit, but I've always felt that kind of from my generation, and certainly from older generations, right? Okay. Let's get after it. Right.
Yeah.
No time to cry about it. Let's move on. I mean, there are a whole bunch of challenges in what you've just outlined. Financial challenge is just one of those where, you know, you get stranded and what do you do, hey?
Mm-hmm.
But on top of that, I mean, the challenges for the kids to deal with the tiredness and the travel and still have to pick themselves up for the game. At least it's a good learning experience.
They had great guts, and Leon and myself had put it to them and said, look, we'll do what you want. Here's how it is. We've raised all this. We've done that. Our budget's maxed because of this. It's down to what you want to do. If you choose that, you know, we can't get there, then we'll contact the league and we'll just say, look, we defer it this year, unfortunately, due to finances.
Right.
And it was the boys that came to us and sat with them and said, no, we're in this position. We should have finished that game off. Let us have another go. So I think we did it. We had a go. And at least when we left, we went, you know what? We were knackered. We were tired. It was a rough end to the season. But we walked away saying we actually give it what we had.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all we can ever ask.
I mean, if there's any justice in the world, that trophy, that potential for that trophy, won't end up being the most important one in many of those kids' soccer careers or trajectories. Maybe they'll end up somewhere else where they can draw on that experience and it'll propel them to something that's bigger and better. Maybe.
Yeah.
You never know. I suppose. Yeah, that's I didn't realize all the details of that story. I only got snippets, and it sounded like it was maybe a bit of a struggle throughout all that. But man, oh man, from one thing to another, there was nothing that you didn't experience over that. At least Washington's pretty to drive across.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
right. And then you know, getting into southern BC and that's and whatnot, and that's pretty too. You weren't bombing in between Medicine Hat and Calgary, which isn't quite as exciting to look at.
But funny thing is, we did what was it, 50 odd hours of driving in the space of a week.
Yeah, a very short period of time.
So massive road trip, and we were seeing familiar places, people like in Boone or whatever, the places, small towns. We're going to the drive-ins or drive-throughs or gas stations, and it was the same people. Hey, how are you doing?
Yeah,
nice to see you again.
Yeah.
We got this Calgary Foothills badge on.
Yeah,
guys from Calgary are still in town. No, we're driving through.
Yeah,
again.
You're almost locals.
Yeah.
did most of them know where Calgary was?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
After a bit of education,
right? After a bit.
In Canada.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Where in Canada?
Yeah.
Do you know my friend from
Halifax?
Yeah. No, I don't think so. Sorry. Can we shift gears a little bit? Because,
sure.
I mean, I maybe alluded to it a little bit, but of course, you know, being in the business of trying to develop players, obviously the whole, you know, potential advent of the Canadian Premier League is something you guys must be keenly eyeing from your perspective and from the, you know, the perspective of the players that are on your developmental pyramid, right? Thoughts on that?
Well, do you know what, like we've discussed before, we're, what a wonderful concept. Our vision is to help change the landscape of Canadian soccer. To do that, we need to, you know, help our men's side get out of the, you know, break the top 100. And to do it, we need a domestic league. I've been saying it for years. We need to be able to have more professional teams for our kids to aspire towards. We don't have... You know, unless you're in the five cities that have it, you don't have a tangible game to go and watch as a pro franchise. You also, the gap between 18s and the first team is huge, and that's why we created our PDL. So you look, you know, last year we had quite a few of the FC Edmonton lads, Bruno Zebes, Ajij, Sakirias, Noah Cunningham, I think Matt King as well was through there. These lads are good enough to play, but they've gone from the jump from, in my opinion, from U18 to the NASL was it's just too big.
Right.
So we've created that bracket with PDL, and we've seen, you know, players that have left us that have gone on and had success. The Canadian Premier League literally gives us more avenues for our players to reach pro. So the tagline for PDL is Path to Pro. Now suddenly, if you know there's 6 to 10 Canadian Premier League franchises that open up across the country. Well, guess what? They want Canadian players, and we have a batch full of them just chomping at the bit that haven't quite cracked into the Whitecaps or TFC or Montreal yet. So, Calgary franchise here, boom, now they've got a farm system to pluck a player from, and it's built in, and that's why our infrastructure's been built from the ground up.
Yeah, and it seems tailor-made for that kind of thing, where, you know, suddenly these kids are going to go. You know, there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, there might not have even been a tunnel before.
No, and I remember, like, when I first came over, I think it was 01, 02, and 03, playing for the Calgary Storm, if I've got my dates correctly. And we're in the USL A League, and great place to come, visit, play, extend my playing career. And We're playing against the Whitecaps, the Seattle Sounders, Montreal Impact, Portland Timbers, great league. And those aforementioned names have gone on to greater things.
Right.
Calgary Storm, we faded into the dust.
Right.
And the
right.
reason being is we came in with a single owner entity, put his money in, lost a lot of money because it was more about the team, and then we built from the top down.
Mm-hmm.
So through those failings, I was working in the front office as well as being part of the playing staff and academy. I learned a lot just watching that, going, oof, we were bleeding money, and it just wasn't
right.
It wasn't smart business. So, you know, if the Canadian Premier League get the business part of it right, then it's a sustainable league. So what we did as a Calgary Foothills is we built from the ground up. We built an unbelievable grassroots program that's headed up by Wayne Cleverly, and a skills academy for the 10s, 11s, 12s. And then we've got, you know, 13s up to 18s. And then we've got the adults. And then we've got our, you know, PDL and UWS system. Now we've got an infrastructure that is ready to support a CPL franchise or an NWSL franchise. And it's already built in. And,
mm-hmm.
and that's what all of Canada needs, is it needs the pyramid approach. That all roads lead to Rome.
Right. I mean, is this, like, speaking for, I guess, a bit from what I know of what's happening in Saskatchewan mm-hmm. specifically, and I suppose this might be able to be translated to some extent across mm-hmm. the country, because, like, the Ticats aren't a mm-hmm. soccer organization, and neither are the Blue Bombers.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So you've got some examples there of potential soccer franchises.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily clubs,
yeah.
right? So, I mean, that it sounds like they might have a lesson to learn from what you guys have done and from what your experience was with the Storm.
Yeah, and always willing to share that, because that's my personal experience. And this is, you know, when people ask, you know, how have we been able to make Foothills a brand? I've got great people here. This isn't my show. It's a team effort, and you know, the Jim Collins one, the right people are on the right seat of this bus, and we've got great people in it, and we're all sharing and rowing in the same direction, and we want the game to work.
Mm-hmm.
So we're busting at the door now to help these kids get into the professional environment. And these other franchises, you know, Winnipeg and Hamilton that you've named, if they're smart enough, they will see the models that haven't worked, and they'll also say, right, we need to attach ourselves to a aspiring academy and work through there, and
right.
you know, literally get the pyramid and attach it to the bottom of them, and they've got their model set.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess if you haven't, you know, gone back 10 or 15 years and established a grassroots
mm-hmm.
Program and a club, then your next way of doing that would be to become mm-hmm. the pyramid, the top of the pyramid mm-hmm. for a club, or maybe multiple clubs. Maybe there's club partnerships that could...
Well, and I know, you know, DeVos has got his hands full now, because he's trying to get a Canadian youth league. Which has standards, and you know, credit to him, he's going to have work and try and go from coast to coast, where we can now have something that's more formalized for the kids of a higher level. So that could then help filter into the Canadian Premier mm-hmm. League as well. So how all these moving parts fit together, that's going to be the interesting bit.
Do you think something like that could work on the prairies? I mean, there's
like a bus, you know, league.
Yeah, well, maybe. I mean, there's League One Ontario and yeah, PLSQ, yeah. and then there were some people trying to start something in BC. It didn't quite come off last year. And I know that, I mean, you know Dave Nutt.
Mm-hmm.
He's been on the podcast a couple times, but it's been a while since he was on, and he really had this vision of a prairie high-performance league.
Yeah, I'd like it. We have to band together until we've got the mass, so we have to start doing it. I think if you took the best team out of Saskatchewan, would be like a provincial level team,
mm-hmm.
are going to compete with one of the best, you know, club teams here, and they've shown, you know, Brett Levi's a great example of players that can come out of Saskatchewan.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we had Mitch Bosch, who was another fine example, great lad. Prairie League, we have to look at creative ways. We do it in hockey. There's bus leagues for the junior hockey leagues.
Right.
We have to follow what's already been put in place to help sport grow. And I think that's a good, you know, combat of it. And also, it creates a wonderful rivalries that actually then helps the CPL grow, because then they're already establishing, you know, Saskatchewan coming into Calgary and Edmonton, or, you know, and I think that's a good concept.
Do you think potentially the Canadian Premier League could kickstart an idea like that? like the idea has been around for a while, but it doesn't. I'm talking about a high performance league for whatever 18 to 21 year olds, maybe.
Could be
in the prairies.
Could be. I know.
Like unless you build it, they won't come.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's true.
I don't know what the answer is. I'm just.
Yeah, no. My personal belief, as you can see, what we've done with the PDL. So for me, if I was making the decisions, I'd have the CPL, and I'd have underneath it an under 23 system that would be paired like a League One, mm-hmm. but I would actually have it with the universities as a summer mm-hmm. league. The reason being is the university system through CIS, and now it's called U Sports, has probably ran the longest, most professional soccer league we've had.
I suppose that's true.
Right? So I think we have to take a bit of what the states do well with the NCAA, applaud what our friends at all the universities have been doing for years. Len Vickery's at Green and Gold, and Mike Mosier's, Carmine Azacco's, Bryce Chapman's, U of S. They've been doing great jobs, and we need to take what they're doing and apply that to the CPL with a summer league that would allow you some of your pros that aren't playing. So, FC Edmonton, for example, or Ottawa, if their top players aren't playing, what they're doing, they just become training players.
Mm-hmm.
But if in Europe or rest of the world, if the top players aren't playing, they're playing for the under-23s.
Right.
They're still getting competitive games
right.
to still develop and be ready to play. So that would be my thing. I would build it as a prairie one, and I'd also have a U17/18 team. That would be my three-layer pyramid, and you would draw from the clubs mm-hmm. because I think the clubs are doing a smashing job. We took our U13s over there. It's not a select team, but our U13s beat... my brother was coaching it. They beat Chelsea, under-13s. So we can match them. It's until they get to 15 and above
mm-hmm.
where now the Europeans and the rest of the world start to push towards, okay, high performance, whereas we just accept that we're going to go to university or not even play.
Right. And all of a sudden, all that work, not that it gets undone, that's too dark of a way to put it, but... the potential isn't realized.
That's a good way.
Yeah. The final thought on like this is a different. I'm thinking of this from a completely different angle. Calgary is a city. Okay, so when you played for the Storm, early 2000s, you guys had financial challenges mm-hmm. and whatnot, and that team. Probably didn't last nearly as long as the owner wanted to last, clearly. Do you think in this city that a potential Premier League franchise would succeed? Do you think the city is
100%
is different than it was?
100% it would succeed.
I mean, we're going on almost 20 years ago, 15 years ago for sure. What's different about it? And why is this a better moment?
Good. I just think we live in an era now of great media. So from social media to televised games, the old USIA League, we would get paper coverage and we'd be in the back of the sports section, and that would be it.
Right.
Now there's a touching distance to your Instagrams, your Twitters, your Snapchats. It's now more tangible, so you can market your product better. It can be in everybody's homes through the TV networks, through the satellite cable, whatever channel that the CPL goes into. Calgary's a city of 1.3 million people now. The demographics are, the ethnic population are from countries that soccer's their first sport. It's mm-hmm. it's a wonderful cross-pollination here, and probably why I fell in love with the city. Just it's so, like, metropolis. It's just, it's different.
Right.
We're a great sporting city. You see now when the Stampeders go on their Grey Cup run, everyone rallies around them. Even when we had our PDL run, we were getting 1,500 out to that playoff game. We lit the tower green and
white.
When the Flames start producing some games, they get some momentum. The Okotoks Dogs, they're getting 2,000-3,000 people in their baseball league.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So I just think Calgary's a great sporting city. I've always said that even back 10 years ago, people thought it was nuts. I said I thought we could sustain an MLS franchise, and I did. And now having its own domestic league on the forefront, 100% I think it's going to be a success in Calgary, 100%.
Well, let's hope that day isn't too far away then, so that we can all kind of enjoy that. Of course, I'm just dying for it to start. But yeah, cross your fingers, I suppose, and it'll be great for your club as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We're excited to help out.
Yeah. Well, thanks again. It's always great to have a chat, and you always have great answers and stories to the questions. Yeah. I always appreciate
go off on a tangent. I do.
The tangents are the best things sometimes. I don't think the breakdowns in the U.S. and the travel were much of a tangent. That was critical stuff. Those are great stories. So, yeah.
Well, thanks, Rob. I appreciate you stopping by, and keep banging the drum for Canadian soccer.
That brings us to the end of episode 97. Thanks for listening, and of course, thanks to Tommy for joining us again. We'll be back sometime in the future with episode 98, so until then, take care.